When life is going well, we can forget how vulnerable we are. But reminders are everywhere. There's always the possibility of pain. A sudden ache in the lower back, a cracked shin, the slow emergence of a throbbing headache, or emotional distress, such as realizing that you just used reply all to reveal an intimate secret. Such examples just touch the surface. There is seemingly no limit to the misery we can experience, often at the hands of others. The simplest theory of human nature is that we work like hell to avoid such experiences. We pursue pleasure and comfort. We hope to make it through life unscathed. Suffering and pain are, by their very nature, to be avoided. The tidying guru Marie Kondo became rich and famous by telling people to throw away possessions that don't spark joy, and many would see such purging as excellent life advice in general. But this theory is incomplete. Under the right circumstances and in the right doses, physical pain and emotional pain, difficulty and failure and loss are exactly what we are looking for. Think about your own favorite type of negative experience. Maybe you go to movies that make you cry, or scream, or gag. Or you might listen to sad songs. You might poke at sores, eat spicy foods, immerse yourself in painfully hot baths. Or climb mountains, run marathons, get punched in the face in gyms and dojos. Psychologists have long known that unpleasant dreams are more frequent than pleasant ones. But even when we daydream, when we have control over where to focus our thoughts, we often turn toward the negative. Some of this book will explain why we get pleasure from these experiences. It turns out that the right kind of pain can set the stage for enhanced pleasure later on. It's a cost we pay for a greater future reward. Pain can distract us from our anxieties and even help us transcend the self. Choosing to suffer can serve social goals. It can display how tough we are, or conversely, can serve as a cry for help. Unpleasant emotions, such as fear and sadness, are part of play and fantasy and can provide certain moral satisfactions. And effort and struggle and difficulty can, in the right contexts, lead to the joys of mastery and flow. This was going to be the topic of the entire book. It was going to be about how suffering can give rise to pleasure, and was going to be called, not cleverly, The Pleasures of Suffering. But as I talked with friends and colleagues and read the work of psychologists, philosophers, and other scholars, I began to have doubts. The theories that work for hot baths and sad songs and spankings turn out not to apply more generally. A lot of the negative experiences we pursue don't provide happiness or positive feelings in any simple sense, but we seek them out anyway. Suffering, yes. Pleasure? No. Think now of a different kind of chosen suffering. People, typically young men, sometimes choose to go to war, and while they don't wish to be maimed or killed, they are hoping to experience challenge, fear, and struggle, to be baptized by fire, to use the cliched phrase. Some of us choose to have children, and usually we have some sense of how hard it will be. Maybe we even know of all the research showing that, moment by moment, the years with young children can be more stressful than any other time of life, and those who don't know this ahead of time will quickly find out. And yet we rarely regret our choices. More generally, the projects that are most central to our lives involve suffering and sacrifice. If they were easy, what would be the point? The importance of suffering is old news. It is part of many religious traditions, including the story in Genesis of how original sin condemned us to a life of struggle. It is central to Buddhist thought, the main focus of the Four Noble Truths. It is at the core of Max Weber's notion of the Protestant work ethic,